Hello, everyone. So today I'll be going to talk to be talking about Tailwind, a new RDMA-based replication protocol. So to start with, general purpose in-memory key value stores are used for various applications nowadays, like social networks or banking and so on and so forth. And actually, recent research has led to key value stores that can perform very well. So basically, they can do millions of operations per second per server. And key enablers actually for that is the fact that they move the bottlenecks from network and slow I/O devices somewhere else. So basically, they leverage fast networks and they leverage multi-core architectures. The problem is that by doing so, the bottleneck has moved to the CPU. So modern in-memory key value stores are CPU bound. And that's because they have to access actually random memory regions, and they have also to the cost of processing get and put operations. On top of that, persistent key in-memory key value stores have to replicate data to survive failures. So basically, this replication adds overhead to the already existing overhead of in-memory key value stores. So to illustrate that, I'll just show you how an in-memory key value store works, like a persistent in-memory key value store works. So basically, you receive normal operations that you put in your DRAM, but then at the same time, for efficiency, you also try to replicate objects. So basically, you're acting as a primary for some objects and a secondary for some other objects. And the problem is that when you have a lot of accesses, you end up with the CPU being used by replication. So actually, replication is expensive in in-memory key value stores, but not only because if you look at the applications that are using these key value stores, such as stream processing or graph processing and so on, so basically you're hurting these applications as well. So I think you get what I'm trying to tell you. So can we leverage new technologies to cut this CPU overhead in in-memory key value stores? And actually, remote direct memory access seems promising, right? So we could just send data with RDMA and not use the CPU at all. So in our example, if you use RDMA, what we could end up with is offloading some load to the network interface, which will process our network transfers via direct memory access, DMA, and basically place backups in a memory directly. And this actually will help the key value store in focusing more on normal request processing, right? So it will increase the throughput of the key value store. Now, there are already systems actually that leverage one-sided RDMA for replications like FARM. But as you might imagine, these systems have their own techniques to achieve atomic network transfers. So basically, what I mean by that is that a primary will send messages instead of directly placing data in the remote memory. So basically, in this case, a primary has sent message 1, 2, and 3, and then afterwards, the backup has to pull these messages, check for integrity, and check that these messages were fully received. And then, and only then, it can apply those messages and incorporate them into the log or the backup region. So as you can imagine, actually, this defeats the one-sided RDMA purposes of efficiency, because we're still using CPU to pull these RDMA requests and incorporate them. So in the next slides, I'll try to walk you through the design intuitions of Tailwind and how we can leverage RDMA to completely leave the backup idle, while ensuring atomicity, of course. So just a simple question. Why can't we just perform RDMA and send data, right? So we could be doing RDMA for replication. For instance, in this case, the primary received the put request, and it starts replicating object A by doing RDMA. So the backup receives in its memory a part of object A. It doesn't know it, that it's there, because it's a one-sided operation, right? But because failures happen very often, the primary could fail in the middle of updating object A, right? And in this case, actually, when the backup tries to recover object A, it has no idea of when or where the primary has ended transmitting. So it can be full, it can be not full. So basically, there's lack of information. So basically, the backup needs some information to make sense of data, right? And actually, systems nowadays, they tend to piggyback some metadata information, like an integrity check, a checksum over the data, and the length of data. So for instance, in this case, you'd have a log on the backup, and then some metadata information somewhere else in the memory telling you, OK, this object A has length x, and the integrity check is some value. And then when you append object B, you receive also another integrity check and the length of object B. So note that the objects can be of various sizes, and so on and so forth. And basically, these integrity checks can also like check all the data because you apply them on all objects and on the previous integrity checks as well. So let's try to do this with RDME. So we send object A, and we send the corresponding metadata. But then in this case, it's straightforward. Like, this is not efficient because, first, RDME doesn't allow you to do remote writes to different memory regions. So basically, you can only do one write to a contiguous memory region. So basically, you end up sending two RDMAs. And there are some works that show that basically you can just use RPCs. It's much more efficient in this case. But worse, what could happen in this case is that, for instance, you replicate object B, you start replicating the metadata, and then you fail. And in this case, not only it corrupts object B, but basically the backup doesn't use at all the backup data because the metadata is corrupt. So you start to feel like that we have to send the metadata with the data itself, right? So what we could do is send the object and some metadata. And then, for instance, when we want to write a new object, we just place it at the end of the first object, and the corresponding metadata will be at the end, right? The problem with this approach is that because we are very unlucky, our primary could fail in the middle of updating the metadata. So basically, in this case, you just corrupt the whole backup log as well. So actually, this leads us to the intuition behind Tailwind. So basically, what we do is that we send an object and the corresponding metadata at the end of the object. And basically, we do it for all objects. So in this case, for instance, you send object A and the corresponding metadata. And then when you want to send object B and you fail, well, the backup has means of scanning its buffers. So it knows that object A is there. It will scan. It will find the metadata. It will understand that this transmission was complete. And moreover, it does something else I'll explain later, but it checks the integrity also of the metadata and the integrity of the size of A, because the size of A could be corrupt or something. So we need this integrity check to like fix the boundaries of the data we received. And in this case, so it can recover A, but since B has been partially sent, it doesn't find the corresponding metadata. So basically, it just discards it. So this is the intuition behind Tailwind. So only received, fully received objects are applied, and all other ones are discarded. So a very important point I want to say is that Tailwind doesn't change anything from the client's perspective. So your storage system keeps the same client-facing interface. So it could be RPCs or whatever. We don't touch it. So basically, Tailwind only works on the server side. So it's completely transparent to the client. And you guess that it's meant for strongly consistent systems. And basically, the metadata I was talking about, in this case, we use only a 4-byte CRC checksum. Usually, you could send the length, but for optimization considerations, we consider that the length of the object is within the object itself. So the metadata is computed over the object and the length. Very importantly, we rely on reliable connected queue pairs. So basically, they ensure that your RDMA transfers are sent at most once, and that they are delivered in order and without corruption. And finally, we only like care about stop failures, so we didn't look at Byzantine failures or other types of failures. So, very quick overview of how the protocol works. So when a primary wants to replicate, basically it sends an RPC. The very first time it sends an RPC and it tells the backup, I want to replicate these objects, and please, if you have some available memory buffer to perform RDMA, give me the information so that I can do RDMA-based replication. And basically, this is a normal RPC, and it's processed by the remote CPU, and the backup has some pre-registered RDMA buffers, so basically it has a pool of buffers, and then they're available, and if some primary requests one of them, it will just make them available to the primary. So it's very important to note that in this case, the primary has exclusive access to that memory buffer, so there is no concurrency over it, right? And basically you receive an acknowledgement, and then all subsequent RDMA requests can, all subsequent replication requests can be performed with RDMA, so it doesn't involve the remote CPU of the backup. So when the primary fills the buffer, it will just repeat the first operation. So basically, it will send an RPC, and it will ask for a new memory buffer to perform RDMA, and so it will be as the first step that we just showed. So it gets a new buffer, and it replicates the object, and so on. And very important to say that, so these buffers are asynchronously flushed to secondary storage. So basically, you write it synchronously to memory, and then you answer to the primary, and then afterwards, after you fill the buffer, you can flush it to secondary storage to reclaim that memory buffer to make it available for other primaries so that you don't run out of memory buffers. So I think the most fun part of this project was to handle failures. So this is most of the complexity is trying to think about nasty corner cases that could happen, right, while you're doing RDMA. And interestingly, it doesn't pose any extra issue for secondary failures, because basically the primary is aware of what it's doing, but what is the more complex is when a primary fails. So basically, for secondary failures, we just implement the same recovery protocols as in the in normal storage systems. So if you want to know more, just look at the paper. We have a discussion on this. And basically, I'll focus just on few cases that could happen when you perform one-sided RDMA and when a failure happens. So again, we have other discussions about data corruption and so on, so just refer to the paper if you want to know more. So what could happen when you perform RDMA? So basically, you could be in the perfect case where you send the object and you send the corresponding metadata, and then you fail. So in this case, the primary has sent object A and B and their corresponding metadata. And during recovery, the backup will scan these buffers. So it sees that A has been fully received, and it sees that B has been fully received, so it can recover both objects. And basically, a very important condition here, how can the backup know that the last checksum is there and is not corrupt? So we have a condition that a checksum is never equal to zero. So basically, primaries, even if they compute a checksum that is equal to zero, they will set it to one. And basically, on the recovery protocol, we will check for this special case. So if we find a checksum that is equal to zero, we will check again the computed value and compare it. And if it's equal to zero, we set it. Like, if we find a one checksum, then we know that, OK, that was a special case. But basically, we zero the buffers at first, and then we don't allow checksums to be zero. So basically, there is no the end of the data should never be zeroed, right? The second case is a bit trickier. So you send object B, but then you fail in the middle of updating the metadata. So in this case, it's clear that we will recover object A, but then object B was fully received, but then the metadata doesn't correspond actually to the computed value. So basically, you will scan these buffers, compute the checksum, and then check against the stored value in the RDMA buffer, and basically just discard it. it's important to see here that there's always this condition to go back always to the last valid entry in the buffer. The last case, I think, is the trickiest one, where you send partially the object. So here in this case, because we made an assumption, I said earlier, that the size of the object is within the object itself. So basically, you could have sent you could have fully replicated the size of the object. You could have partially replicated it. We don't know. So in this case, the algorithm ensures that wherever you get bumped in the in the buffer, you'll always get back to the last valid entry. So here in this case, you will recover object A, then you will try to iterate over object B, and then whenever you finish iterating, like whatever, like the size might be altered, we don't care. As long as we don't find a checksum at the end, we go back to the last valid entry. And this is actually how we ensure atomicity of RDMA transfers. Yes, so basically you get the idea. The metadata itself is an end of transmission marker. And basically, by ensuring the integrity of the size, so it really imposes some kind of strong boundaries over the data that you can recover. So now I'm going to talk about the implementation and the evaluation of Tailwind. So basically, we implemented it on the RAM Cloud in-memory key value store. It's a project that focuses on low latency remote accesses, and it leverages fast RPCs by leveraging also kernel bypass and InfiniBand networks and DPDK more recently. So basically, it keeps every byte of data in memory, and it uses also buffers to flush asynchronously the backup log into secondary storage to ensure durability of data. And basically, in RAM Cloud, they use a dispatch architecture to achieve low latency. So basically, when you want to perform a put operation, you will send it to a server. Then the server have a dispatch core that will check for incoming RPCs, and then it will apply the update, and then it will replicate it, actually. So depending on the replication factor, you might send it to three replicas. And basically, these three replicas have to do all this work, like what is showed in red. So basically, what we hope is that Tailwind actually will remove all this work from the backups. So basically, we use YCSB, and we use three workloads, mixing, writes, only, and reads. So we focus on three aspects, like how much CPU can we get back? And does it improve performance? And I think from the beginning, we guessed that it will improve performance, but why does it improve performance? At the end, we want to know, like, is there any overhead to this, right? So the very first graph I'm showing is actually the CPU cores utilization of four nodes. So basically, values are aggregated. And on the x-axis, we have the throughput offered by clients. And on the y-axis, we have the total CPU cores utilization. So on the left, I'm showing the dispatch of RAM Cloud. And then on the right, the worker cores that are actually processing the request. So basically, you can see that we can save up to 4x CPU cycles for the dispatch, and then 3x even under heavy throughput. And basically, this is like straightforward, because servers are not processing replication requests. And because servers are also collocated, like primary and backups, so they can get back these CPU cycles. So when looking at the latency, because RAM Cloud uses kernel bypass, we didn't expect latency to improve much. But actually, it improves latency, and especially median latency under highly concurrent accesses. And this is mainly because it's a second order effect, actually. Because you get back some dispatch and worker cores, you can process requests faster. So basically, it reduces latency and make it more stable. And it also increases the throughput. So basically, for write-only workloads, you almost get 70% increase in the throughput. And interestingly, like even for YCSBB, which has only 5% of puts, you also increase the throughput by 30%. And again, it is due to the second order effect of getting back some CPU cycles that you could use to process normal requests. And finally, for recovery, we just performed some experiments. But basically, Tailwind, we discussed this in the paper. Tailwind doesn't have to do much work because most of the work is only done on the buffers that are already in memory. And they are very little compared to the buffers that are stored in secondary storage that you flush asynchronously, right? So basically, it doesn't incur any much overhead than the recovery in RAMCloud. So there are some systems that leverage one-sided RDMA, as I already mentioned before, and some other systems that try to mitigate the replication overheads and by tuning consistency. But in Tailwind, we choose to keep the same like strong consistency without compromising performance. So, to wrap up, so Tailwind leverages one-sided RDMA. It can perform atomic replication without degrading performance. Basically, it's very important to note that we don't impose any constraint on the client. So basically, it's completely transparent from the client's perspective. Tailwind only works from the server side. So with this, I conclude my presentation. If you have any questions.
Okay, we have time for questions.
Hi, Sajin Park from Stanford University. For your RAMCloud implementation, do you flush data to disk, or just stay in memory?
Yeah. We flush data to disk. Yeah.
I see. Okay. Was there any difficulty to read the data written by RDMA and flush it to disk consistently or?
So basically, the buffer stays in memory until it's flushed on disk. So the recovery protocol is there until you flush completely the buffer to disk. And basically, the flushing is done atomically, right? No? I don't know.
Right.
Are there any other questions? So actually, I have one. So you mentioned that for zero checksums, you convert them to another value.
Yeah.
Right. So what happens if that other value is the actual checksum of the data?
Oh, actually, this is checked during the recovery protocol. So
okay.
If you find that the computed value is zero, you check if the values of the stored value is one.
Right.
And then this is a small trick like this too.
So we have more time. So there's another thing, which is just more open-ended, right? You mentioned that you don't change the client itself.
Yeah.
If you had the power to do that, if you have a captive application.
Sorry?
If you had a captive application, you could change the client. What do you imagine would improve in your protocol?
I wouldn't change the client, actually. The client, from my perspective, this is server-side, and if you do any update or anything, the client has also to update its code and everything, and you don't want to do that, I think. Right. So you want it to be completely transparent.
Fair enough.
I don't.
All right. Thank you very much.